Tonight, we have with us, as we have for several days here in the village, John Madigan, Father John Madigan. He's a priest in the Roman Catholic Church, and I guess it would be fair also to mention you have a couple of parishioners with you. Mm-hmm. Maybe it would be nice for you to introduce yourselves also. I don't know your names.
John and William Krauss, my son Euler.
Krauss, that sounds like a good Lutheran name. Anyhow, we don't miss a trick here at Holden, and we thought that perhaps it would be good to hear from Father John here about talk with him about what the Roman Catholics were doing specifically over against the bishop's letter. Maybe also get into some things you'd want to talk about what's going on in your areas with Roman Catholic churches, maybe some dialogue, maybe some get-togethers, perhaps over the bishop's letter, perhaps over other things. We think of this time as a discussion time, but perhaps we can hear a little bit from you about what's going on regarding the bishop's letter.
Thank you. I suppose we could have thrown in there at the beginning that I'm here originally from the Holy Land of Ireland. I suppose it wouldn't take long for you to catch up on that. Then every land is Holy Land, so not just Ireland. I live and work as a priest in the Archdiocese of Seattle, and consequently I work under Archbishop Raymond Hunthausen, who many of you might have heard of or known of, was one of the first bishops to kind of raise a voice on this issue and to begin to do some things about the issue in the Catholic Church, the issue of peace and of nuclear weaponry. I might briefly say that began for him, as I recollect, about 4 years back, that in his own reflection and prayer, he came to the kind of conclusions that I see in the bishop's document that you've probably gone over and talked about in the last couple of days. And he began, and of course I only read the Western edition of the news, but I thought that he was nationally heard to have been addressing this issue. And in talking about it for the first year that he did to us in the Archdiocese, he was using the description that he recognized in his reflection and prayer that he saw the madness that was happening around him in the world. And of course it was particularly pressing because it was right there in Bremerton, where the Trident submarine base is located, right in the Archdiocese and across the Puget Sound. And so he began feeling that it was a madness that was escalating in the words in which he described it. And in talking about it for a year, he came to the conclusion that talk wasn't going to be enough, that he was going to have to take some positive action. And he had talked about for some time the possibility that he might, for example, withhold his taxes as a form of protest. And he was the bishop who, a year ago last April, withheld his taxes as a protest against the madness that he saw. And he mentioned things like that he did this to try to highlight the fact that he didn't wish to contribute to the continued build-up of nuclear arms that had the potential to destroy the human race. Now, I'll overlook the fact in my addressing these few words to you, because since this is a forum, I don't anticipate monopolizing here, but that, you know, your own questions might be along the lines that I've seen him challenged about no later than last week. In the Donahue show, I happened to catch the one that was out of Portland, but I believe that it was taped about 2 to 3 weeks ago in Chicago, that people got on him about the idea that if we all could decide, you know, why we didn't want to pay our taxes, we all might have our particular pet things that we'd want to resist, and why should he think that he would choose to do that one, you know? But obviously you could come up with that discussion if you wanted to. But he began that protest in that way and then withheld the taxes. Recently he was asked if anything had been done within the last year, and he said that no, that the IRS hadn't done anything to him. But I believe that others who had done this, private citizens or people who might be less prominent than Archbishop Hunthausen, had their taxes taken out from their bank accounts, but I can't give you chapter and verse, so I shouldn't hold it up as if it actually happened. I understand that it did from some private citizens who followed his lead. During this time, the Lutheran campus minister in Seattle, John Nelson, had also been in on the protesting at the Trident Air Base. And some of you will be aware that he was arrested for some of his activities. I noticed that some of his tapes are down in the library if you're interested in pursuing hearing of him. And he was sent to jail. Archbishop Hunthausen stopped short of the kind of activity that might have had him arrested. He didn't feel that it was a judicious thing for him to go ahead and protest and get in front of trains or so forth. But John Nelson, in doing that, was arrested and was imprisoned for some time a couple of years back. And Archbishop Hunthausen became one of his closer friends and supporters, and he went down regularly to the prison to visit with John Nelson. And John, I think, testifies in some of the things that he said, that Archbishop Hunthausen was a great moral support to him and spiritual support during that time. As a response to these things, I might say that from the Catholic priests I could talk about, first of all, it was a very divided response. The response was almost divided, in I would almost say 50-50. And the 50 that found it very difficult and would have been against what Archbishop Hunthausen did were probably those from middle age and upwards, by and large. Those from middle age and down were somewhat supportive, and some very much supportive of that. And it was a very divided issue, and in some of our gatherings, some of the priests spoke very strongly against, and the Archbishop had time and again to put forward his rationale and his reasoning and what he was doing and why he was doing it. The announcement of his withholding of taxes, incidentally enough, I understand, came at a Lutheran gathering, a Lutheran convention. And it was a very difficult one for him that he was put on the spot. He had arrived at this decision in conscience, and he was awaiting the first opportunity in gathering with the priests or in notifying us that he was about to do this. But the Lutherans had invited him to speak, and at that the media began to converge on him, and he was asked point blank if he was going to carry through on the thought that he would withhold his taxes, and he felt that he shouldn't lie. And he found himself on the spot of having to say, yes, I'm about to do that, and then afterwards write to the priests and say, I regret it had to come out in this way, but I didn't feel that I should lie, and then come out a week later and say, well, really, I was fudging until I told the Catholic priest and so forth. So that was a difficult situation for him to be in, as you might appreciate, but he didn't want to lie when he was put the question point blank. So things have taken off from there, and for us in this coast anyway, and I don't know how much nationally that you've heard, he's been very much in the forefront of talking about this and standing up and saying that we really have to do something. One thing that I'm particularly proud of, a decision that he made, was that last summer he was invited to address the peace rallies in Germany. There was a particularly big one in West Germany last summer, and he was invited to come and address that, and he declined to go. And he did that for the reason of saying that as these invitations came in, he wanted very much not to be the focus of the issue, because he wasn't the issue and he didn't want to become the issue. He wanted to stay out of being the issue to allow the real issue to surface. And I think that that did a great deal for his standing, for example, with many of the priests in the archdiocese and with many of the other priests and bishops in the country, for the reason that he was wanting to not become then the bandwagon and so forth. And I think that was a very good move on his part. And he has continued to show that same kind of judgment. For us on the local level, just to say a few things on that without continuing with the Archbishop, I think that it has been very difficult on the local level and very divided, for the reasons that some of our priests work in areas where Catholic people are employed in the Trident bases, the submarine bases, and that has been very difficult. And in Archbishop Hunthausen's letters to us, in asking us to begin to deal with this issue, he did say that he felt in conscience we should begin to address it, but that he didn't want to violate our own consciences by saying, I order that you get up and speak about it. because he said, I know that many of you are in very difficult situations and perhaps haven't come to an understanding for yourselves, which many of us hadn't in the day-to-day workings of parish life, hadn't had to face it. And so he requested that we inform ourselves, and as best we could, and felt in conscience that we could, to try to begin to address it as an issue, as a moral issue, that addressed the fact of the lives of many people were at stake here. In local small town Kelso and Longview, I'm part of a twin town situation in southwestern Washington. It's the Minneapolis-St. Paul of southwestern Washington, many times divided. We have had different things there. We've gotten together, especially in a Catholic-Lutheran dialogue over the last couple of years, the priests and the ministers, the Lutheran ministers. And for the first year of that, we tried it, a discussion of the Augsburg Confessions of all things. We distributed copies and said that the Catholic priests ought to read them, and we would come ready to talk about and share those things. Well, it kind of fizzled a bit for various reasons. We were either busy to read, or the discussion stayed very much at a head level, and we didn't really feel we were getting to where we would have liked to get. And so this past year, we decided that we would deal with pastoral issues, that we would come in and that we would share and take up topics that were important to us. And one such topic was the peace issue and the addressing of the nuclear arms. And on one such occasion, I was invited by one of the local Lutheran churches, Trinity Lutheran in Longview, to address their men's breakfast. They have once a month breakfast and so forth. And that forced me to read the bishop's document, because I hadn't quite gotten to grips with it myself. And the chance to come over and to begin to share and to talk about some of those things. May I mention briefly that during the past year as well, that in talking here with Norm, we have the annual ecumenical observance, the end of January, the beginning of February. And so we have gotten into exchanging pulpits, not just with the Lutheran churches. I exchanged this past February with the Presbyterian Church, and we exchanged pulpits. But one of the things that happened was in the St. Rose Church in Longview, that they hosted there, that all of us as the Catholic community hosted an observance and invited all the churches. And one of the Lutheran ministers addressed the gathered people at St. Rose Church on the subject of ecumenism and working together and so forth. And then when the observance of the anniversary of Luther came up in the Trinity Lutheran, they invited the Catholic priest to come over and address the gathering on that particular day on the Lutheran celebration. And it really was a very significant step forward for two small towns in that part of the country. And I know that it really has left a mark, our coming together and our working together and beginning to talk about these issues. And the difficulty, I think, for us as Catholics and in talking with John and Anne, to find right now that it seems that many of the Lutherans and many of yourselves here are a great deal more familiar with some of these documents, I hate to say, than we, the average Catholics, are in our parishes. John and Anne, you might think that seems true.
I've listened to them the last couple of days when this has been brought up. At our level, anyway, that we are at our parish, we hadn't really seen the documents, had heard briefly, you know, bits and pieces, but hadn't really had a chance to read it and figure out what was in it, what was said, and what we are to do next. So it's really kind of opened our eyes, and now we need to take a good close look at it and proceed from there.
I might conclude just my input comments time, so as to invite your own participation, that for me personally, as a priest, having mentioned the general thing that has been happening, I've taken the position for myself that I see Archbishop Hunthausen in the local situation and the bishops in the prophetic role, that role of prophet, of daring to get up and to call something at a difficult time. And Archbishop Hunthausen, in doing it here, has received a lot of opposition from the average Catholic person. He does say now that his mail tends to run 74 and 30 against, roughly. I think he mentioned that in the Donahue program last week, that he's supported by about 70% of that mail. But several things happened. Many people began to say, if you're withholding your taxes from the legally and lawfully elected government, we'll begin to cut down on our contributions to the church. And many of the upper and middle and upper class people began to say, we don't like what you're saying, and we will withhold our contributions, and many did. His response was, I can't compromise the gospel that I now hear and see by saying I have to turn back because you threaten me this way. And so he chose to go ahead. And in actual fact, in our annual archdiocesan appeal, the response has been overwhelmingly positive, that many more people who previously did not respond have responded very positively, while those who were previously the loyal supporters have chosen not to. Some of them in that way, and very painfully even for me, my friends in that middle and upper area and parishes that I've worked in, have ceased to buy the archdiocesan newspaper, The Progress, as a mark of their confronting this and disagreement with him. They've described it as being red and so forth, and they don't want it in their homes. That's been painful because they've been friends of mine, and I've had to say, I disagree. But hopefully in the pain of division and separation and so forth, that we will still, you know, follow that gospel of peace or try to struggle to make sense. And for me, I've seen him as the prophet. I've seen him as having what I might describe and have described as an Abrahamic faith, one that has set out for the Ur of the Chaldeans, and this time not knowing quite where it's going to go, not really knowing the answers, but willing to set out in faith. Because in our gatherings, when he's been pressed to say where he's going, for the first time I've heard a bishop say things like, you know, I'm not sure where this all is going to lead, but I feel challenged and called by the gospel and by the fact that we're to be apostles of peace to follow this path. And I've seen many of our priests say, but you're the archbishop, you're supposed to know. What do you mean you don't know where we're going? You have the answers, haven't you? For the first time, an archbishop of the church has said, well, I see some things, but I don't know all the answers. And I think that's been a very prophetic kind of stance, because we are not used to saying that in the Catholic Church at any rate. And that's been a new challenge. In terms of where I finally stand, you know, myself, it's a struggle. I'm not immediately touched by it in the parishes in which I work. I haven't had to be faced on the lines of, you know, where do you stand? And so it's been easy to dodge it in some ways. But more importantly, it's been good to have the space to begin to try to deal with the issues. I'm not your intellectual, and I can't quite pick up the books and really read it and get the thing in my mind. It takes me time, osmosis and various things to try to take it in. And I've been glad of this breathing space. But one thing that has really been difficult that I've had to confront in the last 6 weeks, and somebody's challenge, was to say that if I'm going to be that brave and challenging about getting up and challenging where the society is leading us today, I've heard demonic mentioned in some of the talks here in the last couple of days. I recently, as a pastor in a church, have installed a sonatrol security system in the church and rectory to prevent break-ins or things like that. I've installed a system that monitors us all the hours of the day that I want. And the challenge I've heard is, if you're going to talk about a government that you're challenging about building up all these securities and wanting to be secure and so forth on the international level, why are you on this little level locking your doors if you're so concerned about trusting in the Lord and all those wonderful things? And I hadn't thought of that angle. I don't know if you've thought of it. But I wish it was original, but this isn't my original thinking. But I've been challenged by it to, I think it was a judge in Tacoma, if I'm not sure, that first raised this issue some months back, and said that if we're to be real, why are we locking our doors? If we don't think security is that important on the level of our governments, why are we doing it? And maybe I'll finish on that note and invite whether questions or your own dialogue or back and forth.
Do we need 20 billion locks on our door, though? Do we need 20 billion guns in our house?
Yeah. Father, concerning that the Catholic bishop's letter, I've heard it questioned because of its exclusivity or selectivity, in the sense that it did not address itself to convention of weapons and things like that. Do you want to say something about that? Has that been handled and addressed?
Yeah, that question has certainly come up a lot as to why the bishops have only seemed to take on this issue now, and then, of course, the nuclear aspect. And I think that it could well be that some people in the room might give a better answer to this than I would, so they should feel free to join in here. But as I understand it, they've addressed the issue that seems most pressing, in that for the first time as a community, I guess since Genesis, they mentioned, we have the capacity to wipe out the world, to wipe out each other. This is the first time that this capacity has been attained. And so for the first time, they're addressing an extreme situation and feel the need to do that, but have pointed out here in the letter that that's not the only thing that they wish to address, that they wish to address all forms of violence. And they have mentioned, the abortion issue, the violence to the poor, the violence to anything from the unborn to the aged, that there is violence in all our situations. And on the local level, I've been looking at that more and more as a practical little thing to begin with. If, as the bishop suggests, that addressing this larger issue must begin within ourselves and our own hearts, and they say including a prayer every day in our public worship for peace that begins in ourselves. I've recently discovered, in working as a chaplain to the Kelso Police Department on call, that the highest extent of violence in our country today is domestic and sexual violence. I wasn't aware of that, and this would be getting off the track, and I don't particularly want to move off the track, but I've been trying on the local level, then realizing, as I was listening to a speaker recently on this area who was well versed with it at a workshop, saying that the greatest number of deaths in the United States today is from domestic violence, and the most likely place for you to be killed is your own home by your spouse, and often initially by the telephone that you've tried to call for help on. I see that they've mentioned that the whole spectrum of violence that we need to begin to deal with, but of course the one that extremely got the attention between the media and everything and what they was the actual area of nuclear weapons. But no, they've not only tried to say exclusively that.
Yeah, I think it should be pointed out that there is a section on conventional warfare in there. And they say, contrary to what I've heard some other people say, that it's not a matter of one or the other. In other words, if we reduce nuclear arms, we're going to have more conventional arms. They're very clear about the fact that we've got to reduce both. Obviously, there's not as much space given to that, but it's very clearly dealt with.
It is.
Someone else.
How does the higher control of the Catholic Church feel about this bishop?
I think, first of all, the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, if we're talking about the Pope, the document does document the many times that popes have addressed the issue. But they've addressed it at the distance, and it's been easily being able to be left at the distance and filed away, and the Pope has said this. Somebody made the comparison in the last couple of days for me here that at Lutheran gatherings that people passed resolutions and were able to say, well, we passed a resolution on this, but so what? I would hate to characterize that simplistically. But for so long, these issues had been addressed, but the Pope at that level will address, as you can well appreciate, broad, general areas. But for the first time on the local level, somebody like Archbishop Hunthausen has had to say, practically in our daily lives, what does this mean here and now? And so many people who opposed Archbishop Hunthausen, I can only speak for the Archdiocese of Seattle, let's say, had been unaware that popes had addressed it. But that for the first, it's really easy to deal with somebody as far away as Rome. You don't have to fight with somebody at that distance. You don't live around them. But suddenly you live around somebody who raises the issue in very practical ways. Now, the surprising thing at the level of the bishops then, and maybe I shouldn't use the qualifying thing surprising, but that many of the bishops who would have been characterized as being highly conservative, an example might be Cardinal Kroll of Philadelphia, and people like that, have suddenly been seen to come out in support of this and have spoken in support of it. which was a very strong challenge for the group of priests of middle age and up, who were first thinking that Herrnthausen was a radical and why should we be let off? But suddenly respectable Cardinal Kroll said, this is a pressing issue, and threw that into confusion. Now, I don't wish to convey that somehow that from middle age up somebody is out of it. I haven't had to deal yet with what change is like in 50 and 60 and 70, and I don't wish to convey that I say that lightly, you know. But so that it has been a whole new challenge to have the hierarchy begin to vote so overwhelmingly to say we are all going to put our names down here. There were some people who have disagreed with this among the bishops, but the overwhelming majority, you might even have the number, have voted. Like 260 is against six or something like that. I mean, that's been unprecedented in support.
I heard one commentary over the analysis over the news a couple of weeks ago where there was pressure put on from the Reagan administration through powerful Catholic lay people, plus Catholics that were very high in the armed services, who were very much interested in stopping this thing. And they brought about a proposed compromise kind of statement that was watered down a little bit that they thought might satisfy everybody. But when it came to the vote, this 300 or 200 to 6 thing just overwhelmed everybody. The bishops just stuck together on the thing all the way through.
Right. As a lay person, that was the most frightening time, and thinking that possibly that body of bishops might be influenced by the political powers that might be. And it was really very, real good when they said that.
Well, is the point, and I heard that today, and I think it was from you, that was the point, did that occur, that when the bishops got the impression that the public thought that they were being influenced by the administration, by the Reagan administration, that had a boomerang effect. They said they did not want to get put in that kind of a bind. Is that what you...
Yes, yes.
Well, Norman, there's more to it than that, though. After the second draft came out and the Reagan administration voiced its opposition to it, the person who was the chief drafter of it, Brian Hare, listed the... things that needed to be dealt with for the final draft, and in the order of importance. The first one was the internal moral argument. There were some problems there. Second major area of concern was the hierarchy elsewhere. What would the West German bishops say? What would the English bishops say? What would the Italian bishops say? The third in the row was whether the American bishops might be going further than the Pope on deterrence. And the fourth item was the Reagan administration. At no point was the reaction of the Reagan administration the top of the list of things to be concerned about. It was the universe. It was the global character of the Catholic Church and the internal moral argument that were the major concerns.
Right, and one of the things there also was the invitation of the American bishops to Rome to meet with the bishops from the countries you mentioned, the West German bishops, the Italian bishops, and to really exchange the views and have them hear the wider spectrum of what was being said in Europe as well as over here.
Did they include the Eastern bishops too, like the Poles and the Czechoslovakians?
My understanding is, I recall that they didn't, that it was the German and the Italian mostly, as I recall. I open to correction.
I just wondered why they didn't include them. They're in the arms race as much as, you know, they have as much as the Anglo-Saxons.
I think that I'm not sure if I know the political ins and outs here, but the course, NATO would not include the Eastern ones. Whereas it was the NATO, the people under that NATO area they were concerned with. And of course also the fact that we've been nice about saying in this country that if nuclear war is fought, that it might well be in Western Europe, you know.
Yeah.
So
you mentioned earlier that the split seemed to be at the middle age. My neighbor is above middle age, and he addressed that topic one night because he felt that the disarmament movement was naive because the United States and NATO went into a, not NATO, because NATO didn't exist then, but went into an isolationist stance before World War One and before World War Two. And what happened was the wars got out of hand, and he felt that if the United States stayed involved, used defense as a deterrence and stuff like that, that they could probably withhold war for a longer period of time than they could without it. And I just was wondering, I haven't been able to read the letter, but I'm just wondering if the bishop addressed that in any way.
I'm not sure that I've fully understood your question, but one thing that comes to mind from, you might need to come back in here, one thing that comes to mind from reading it was that the mention that the United States was the first one to develop atomic weapons and was the only one so far to use them. And I guess there's the challenge maybe of thinking that maybe if we could give a lead in turning the other way, that certainly might be something that would be really helpful, but I'm not sure if I grasped your question.
Well, my neighbor's point was that if the United States, or the people of the United States, react strongly enough, and the United States does withdraw and disengages its armament, or dismantles its armament.
Like a unilateral, okay, that's a naive view. Archbishop Hunthausen has been somewhat tarred with that, with coming over with that view, because of saying that he has called for a unilateral setting aside of weaponry. And I hope I'm not misrepresenting him when I say that I think that he has taken that extreme position to force us to think. I wouldn't want to say that he only did it to get us to think, because I think that he would say that we had the responsibility to really give a lead, and that if we did, his one view that he had was that there was so much fear built up that if that fear could be dissipated, that we might not indeed see a takeover by Russia so much as a sigh of relief that would follow suit. Well, you know, there's certainly open to charges of naivety. I couldn't deny that.
I don't hear unilateral disarmament in this
letter. Not in this document, no. No.
I mean, it just simply doesn't go that far.
No.
It talks about the moral issues, but it deals very much. I think one of the very helpful things about the letter is that it deals with the situation fairly practically as it is. Mm-hmm. It does not project a utopia.
Right.
To a Lutheran clergy group in the Northwest this spring, Sister Juliana Casey spoke. She's a Mother Superior from Detroit, I think, mm-hmm. and was one of five non-bishops in a committee, I believe, of 10, if I'm recollecting correctly, who took testimony and did a lot of the work behind the scenes for this letter. And one of the points she made in an informal question and answer period was she believed the letter was important, but she believed that the process of the letter was probably going to be more important, that it was the most open democratic process a group of American bishops had ever been involved with, and that in any future dealings with other issues, the bishops could never work in the same old ways. It would have to be different. Do you sense that or heard that kind of comment?
I haven't heard it specifically, you know, in that way, but I certainly, from what you're saying, could concur with that, we're really seeing a whole new approach to things here, or at least a development, I would say, because there's nothing that's totally new other than a development that has been coming over a period of time. And that, yes, indeed, that it will call for a different way of going. And I don't know right now what the future will be in that way in dealing with issues, because the bishops have always dealt with pressing issues. This one happened to really get more press than had other issues had been, because they always at their meetings deal with current situations, possibly never so forcefully, are never so united, are never so out there that they felt the call of the moral obligation to address it with you know, that whole respect for life that was involved here. But yeah, I could see what she's saying there.
Do they come up with a pastoral letter every time they meet them? I don't quite comprehend the significance of the pastoral letter. That's just sent out for a big look over, or is it more of a direct?
The bishops in the United States meet twice a year in main session, and they cover the whatever range of topics they have on an agenda, which will always, you know, more and more include issues of the day. They don't always put out pastoral letters, and perhaps this is the most significant thing they've done for some years in that way, because this was such a pressing issue for, like, in a sense, all of humanity. Very often, most often, our issues are simply in relation to the Catholic Church and helping to form conscience in the Catholic Church. I think this one is a contribution to forming conscience in the whole spectrum. Many groups have jumped in here to form conscience as to what we should do, and the bishops really said that we want to be in there too, helping with the formation of that conscience. But no, they don't always come out from those meetings with this kind of pastoral letter. On the local level, each bishop coming back will send out a letter about some pertinent issues to priests, to inform priests what has gone on, but rarely anything of this magnitude, you know. At least, of course, in my recent living memory, only being a priest for 9 years, there has been nothing of this magnitude.
One of the things that interests me about this letter is the manner in which authority is perceived. We were talking about this at breakfast. If Lutherans came together in convention and passed something, we would all say, ho-hum, here's another resolution. We've had hundreds of them, and some of them have been very good statements. But when these bishops sent out this letter, there's a whole different feel about this thing. It's as though all Catholics in the United States have spoken. I mean, it isn't true, but there's that feeling about it because of the nature of authority in the Roman Catholic Church, mm-hmm. which many times I suppose I've felt very critical of, but on this issue I said, gee, I'm awfully glad it's there, you know. I have a question, and that is, what authority, what is the nature of the authority of this document for the priest and the parish in the Roman Catholic Church in this country?
Two things come to mind here, and I hope I can pick up from what you said to give a little counterbalance here. That you might recall in reading this that they have stressed that documents from the bishops have different levels of weight, and that this one is not exactly put on the level of like doctrinal issues that they deal with. I think they've made this point. That to say that while it doesn't have the weight of many of the doctrinal issues we've dealt with in our church in establishing something as doctrine for us, that they are still saying that this is a very significant document, but they haven't quite put it up there with the A+ in one way. Mm-hmm. And yet this hasn't taken from the significance that it has stirred up. Now, a strange thing that taking up from what you've said, that to give a local example where Archbishop Hunthausen coming back at this national level with this document, he's now finding it very hard to have a platform and a forum within the Catholic Church by which he can set the ball rolling and really disseminate this document. That in actual fact, he finds himself having to respond to invitations from the Lutheran Church and the Episcopal Church in the forums that they have to actually promulgate this document. And that's a strange thing.
Why?
Because we haven't seemed to have that kind of forum. In the church in Seattle, now, for example, the Archdiocese of Seattle, we are developing that forum under the aegis of Catholic Charities, maybe, which is a very broad umbrella, that is providing a forum for dealing with justice issues. We just hadn't developed our area of dealing with justice and peace issues. And so we are now, somebody said about the Catholic Church at the time of the, I forget which of the theologians in Europe had commented that we have a habit of arriving breathless and late on the scene. And I don't know where that came from. But for the first time, we don't seem to be breathless and late. But in the archdiocese here, we are breathless and late in trying to form a structure through which to put this out. And Archbishop Hunthausen, I think, has been responding more to invitations of your churches to try to keep the ball rolling, because if you let it stop and it starts to be filed away, well, ho-hum, you know. But the issue is too great to just let it go. And so we are now somewhat frantically trying to develop these forums by which we can bring this out. And there's a whole section here of asking us in parish level and the level of youth and so forth to try to develop this and to make it part of our programs for this coming year. I was astounded yesterday to see one of your young people here at Holden Village. Where would I put him? At about third grade, I think, without having to get into his name. That he was down there listening to a tape over in front of the building, and I went over and I said, "Well, what are you listening to?" It was the nuclear arms. And I thought, what in the world? We're not giving our kids at that age. Of course, maybe he was particularly precocious, but he was tuned into this tape of nuclear arms.
Hey, let me question you a little bit on this. I read in there that the bishops are saying, you deal with this in your parish. Mm-hmm. They're not saying, you know, if you'd like to, it would be good. They're saying, deal with it. Now, it may be difficult, mm-hmm. we can be sympathetic with that, and it's got problems, we'll give mm-hmm. you all the help we can, but I'm your bishop, you deal with it.
All right.
That's what I'm hearing.
So what does that mean for me? Okay, as a very busy pastor on my own in a parish that's as busy as many of your parishes that you're pastoring, I'm almost through with being God, I think, and having to save the whole world. I think I'm sort of working through it very slowly, and that I don't have to be omnipresent and so forth, but that I am the kind of pastor who is saying, now, wait a minute, I have a very busy day, it's a long day, but I've got to start reading this document. Fortunately, Trinity Lutheran invited me over to speak in it. I had to pull it out and start reading it. And then to begin to say, okay, what do I do with this? There are many people in this parish who are already, the feeling is they're already saying, and I sometimes like them saying, I've heard so darn much about this nuclear stuff, I don't want to hear another darn thing. And so as a pastor, you're getting up knowing that this is coming from a body of people, and you want to think, okay, how do I kind of disarm this? I mean, get around this. you know, okay, that's one thing. And the other thing that tugs in here is, as they say, this is too significant to be put off by poor reaction, you know. And how do I begin to say to my teachers in CCD, Sunday school, you know, okay, we've got to begin to talk about this. How do I, in my adult education programs, begin to address it? I tend to be, in my own practice, since we're just taking a particular example, low-key, but I hope positively strong about the issue. Let me put it this way. I've come to the realization that it's important, on the one hand, to expose what I believe in and I think is important, set it out there, and yet not impose it, and to discover the balance. Because for a whole range of people, how do I, you know, and I sit down and reflect like the rest of you and pray about it, to know how can I present this that invites people to really think of a very serious issue and yet not turn off this whole range of people. And I've only been at the initial stage. If this was published in May, I still haven't received my free copy. I didn't want to buy it because I'm going to get it free from the Archbishop's office. I'm a poor pastor in a local little parish. But I have to begin reading it and attending informational sessions that will be put on by the Archdiocese to inform myself first. And I now find myself in a very interesting situation for me. I was one of those who complained as an ordinary, non-involved layman in the 60s when the Vatican Council came out and the priest got up and said, we will now turn the altar around and you will now sing and we have ways of making you and so forth, whatever it was. And you will now respond in English and you will move into the church and all the rest of it. And I said, darn, if they're going to make me move, I'm staying right here at the back door as a student in college in the later 60s and so forth. And I was one of those who complained and said, they never explained it to us, they forced us into it, and now I'm on the line. Now I'm the one who discovers it can be very difficult to inform oneself and to take the time to read, to have the time over what you think are very important pastoral ministries to be doing, and yet to say, I now have to present this. And let's see how good I am, having criticized those in the 60s who didn't think did such a good job. And that is a tough challenge. I've appreciated opportunities at Holden Village to begin to learn a little more about the bishop's pastoral, and not just that, but to hear the range of questions and issues that have to come up, including the ones about why I monitor with Sonatrol 24, whatever hours a night or day, you know. And even if it's not 1 million locks, it's, you know, it is still an issue to think about.
Go ahead. I can't help but feel as though that in our particular area that the bishops have a lot of breathless and light, that there were many Catholics that were involved in walking to New York and being involved in the demonstrations and have felt that they, that thank God they were saying what they were saying, and mm-hmm. they're glad that they were coming along, but that I'm not so sure that you're going to have to be as prepared as you.
I think that there's a section in there on the address to those in the military, which is very sensitive, and says that the leaders in the military must never treat soldiers as weapons, that they have to be treated as human beings with consciences, and the soldiers should never consider themselves simply as tools, but always operate in conscience. It's a, I think, a fairly sensitive.
It became particularly sensitive for us in Seattle area when Archbishop Hunthausen described the Bremerton, the Trident Air, the submarine base, as the Auschwitz of Puget Sound. And that really got it going. That, for those of you who saw the Donahue program, that certainly came out there, where people got very upset and disagreed with his analogy, which was a very difficult one, that he described the trains carrying the Jews to Auschwitz. And then he made the similarity with the trains carrying these parts to Trident Base in Bremerton. Now that got very heated, as you can appreciate. And that he wanted to say, well, what's the difference? One carried a whole group of people to their death, and the other is bringing the weaponry that could send many more people to their death. And that certainly provoked a lot of very emotional response and reaction.
Yes, in the back row there, please.
I just have to say that I have very great respect for the Catholic bishops as well as for the Lutheran ministers, or whatever you might call their group, or any other, to put themselves on that spot, because that's something that had to be said.
And therein lies the challenge of prophet or naivete. You know, there are the arguments.
I've been wondering what connection your bishops in this country have with the bishops in Europe, in the countries of Europe. Is there a back and forth communication?
There is an increasing back and forth communication, along with what we mentioned earlier about their coming together in Rome recently. Maybe one additional thing on this would be that since the present Pope has established these synods of bishops in carrying through on the Second Vatican Council, that meet every 3 years on significant issues, like last year when they met, it was on family. The next one is to be on reconciliation, I understand, confession in the Catholic Church, and so forth. Now, increasingly, bishops from around the country are meeting and becoming close friends in a way that they hadn't been before. I mean, they weren't enemies before, but in dialogue. I recently got a specific example from this. I was addressing a group of priests as part of a ministry I was involved in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where Archbishop Robert Sanchez is the bishop at Santa Fe. And he mentioned in our discussion at dinner one evening that he was one of the four bishops that was sent from the United States to that conference, that synod, last year. And I asked him if he had begun to know the Irish bishops, and he said, yeah, that Archbishop Dermot Ryan of Dublin and he had become close friends, and that they now call each other in the round of a month and so forth. And likewise, he mentioned meeting the English bishops and so forth. So it seems clear that there's a greater developing rapport around the world.
Don't you think it would help if they all got a copy of this?
Okay. I'm sure that they have.
I really think that would be very important.
I would be more than surprised if every group of bishops around the world hasn't received a copy of this.
Okay, good.
Yeah, Dan.
Hi. Can I ask a somewhat related but very different question? So long as it's not too difficult.
Is there any news about the reapproachment of the Roman Catholic Church with the Chinese, mainland Chinese Catholic Church? That you know of, or is that?
At this distance, Dan, and being a local little practitioner in a small parish and not really knowing only what I hear from the distance, which, you know, doesn't fill me in on everything, it seems a very difficult situation in that Chinese church. And I really don't honestly know. From what I pick up simply from the published reports, it seems a very antagonistic kind of thing. And I really would be out of my depth to think that I would chance my arm on commenting on that.
Do you know somebody who would know?
The only person that I could think of in the Seattle Archdiocese would be our theologian in residence, Peter Kirikov, who works out of St. Thomas Seminary in Seattle. I would think that he would be somebody who's in touch with that scene more than me.
Okay, anybody have something they want to say? Close to the end here. Yes.
To help Father John sleep a little better tonight, this anxiety thing. And it's not quite carefree, I can assure you. There was a letter of minority report, videotaped twice, so if you didn't hear it from one ear, you could hear it from the other at a different location. In the parochial grade school at Woodburn, Oregon, and at Portland University, Portland, Oregon, same speaker, same subject. And she came as a very educated mother. I'm sure Robert Schuller just wished he knew the Bible as good as she did. And she just went out and told all the bishops, hey, you fellows compromised, don't you ever do it again. She said, follow the gospel, and she sat down. And she got back up and went point by point by point. And like I said, she knew the gospel and she lives it.
You know, there's probably a very significant point, you know, briefly on that for Catholic people that you know, in thinking of what John and Anne mentioned about the maybe lack of involvement of the average Catholic person on this. Much of this does draw, you know, from the scripture. And as a Catholic people, we have fallen a little behind over the years in terms of really knowing the scriptures. And on scripture study, as for the average person, we have our scholars, yes. But for the average person, and we've come to recognize that we have some catching up to do in placing, you know, a great deal of emphasis on the sacramental life in church, not over and against, but, you know, instead of along with the scriptural. And I think that has sort of held back many Catholic people, because this, you know, so much of it is the challenge of the gospel today, and we wish we were farther along.
It should be said about this letter that the whole first section, it starts in with the Old Testament and goes to the New Testament. It speaks specifically and fairly well at length about Jesus' teaching. Then it moves into the church history and the church doctrine. Mm-hmm. So we could hardly be accused of not being biblical in its orientation.
Right.
Well, it is... Dan, go ahead. You got a couple of minutes here. 4:10.
It's very interesting. You know, I've been starting on the LCA peacemaking statement, Lutheran Church in America, and it's on the actual situation of war, it seems to depend almost completely on natural theology, justifiable war that comes from the classics. So now we have to go to the Roman Catholic Church to see somebody that teaches the scripture. And the LCA statement says nothing about Jesus in relation to peacemaking. Doesn't talk about the New Testament witness of peacemaking, but bases it on natural theology. So I want to thank the Roman Catholic Church for being the church that has gone to the scripture, and we need help.
And I think wherever we end up on this issue, or wherever we are, the call really to be peacemakers is the thing that we can't be satisfied just to let things go, but what can we do positively to be peacemakers in our time?
Could you... Phyllis, I got here. I didn't get here at the beginning of the week. I don't know whether anybody has informed you. What is going on, actually? You mentioned something, LCA. What has the LCA been doing on this thing? I know, you know, Missouri, I haven't filtered down.
Dan, can you give us a recitation just briefly of where the LCA and ALC are in terms of this issue and public statements?
The American Lutheran Church passed a statement last summer, right, San Diego, called to peacemaking. I thought it was a very good statement. Then the LCA has one now that congregations are working on that will be voted on next summer in Toronto.
I read somewhere that there are some people who are very much for making good, strong statements are saying they should vote against that.
Yeah, I think we should adopt the Roman Catholic statement.
Yeah. Thank you. And is it appropriate to say we're awfully glad you're around?
Thank you.
I'm glad to have Roman Catholic people able to say the things they're saying on my behalf.
It's been a pleasure to discover Holden Village for the first time, thanks to my friends who brought me from the parish.
Okay. Well, that's great.